May it please the court, my name is Karen Suarez and I am here on behalf of the plaintiff's selectees in this matter. We are here today because the State Department rushed to judgment in voiding the results of the first fiscal year 2012 diversity visa lottery, and in doing so deprived selectees, a group of people who had played by the rules and had diligently pursued the visa lottery process as a way to realize their dreams of immigrating to the United States, of their right to have their applications evaluated. Today, I would like to address two issues. First, I will demonstrate that the district court erred when it found that the State Department's actions were not arbitrary and capricious, and then I will turn to why the defendant should be stopped from refusing to process selectees' applications. The district court erred when it found that the State Department's actions were not arbitrary and capricious. The district court came to its conclusion despite the evidence that it is clear that at the very least 2% of the selectees were picked by a random process, and further, that plaintiffs demonstrated that the evidence provided by the State Department, namely the declarations of Karit Amin, were unreliable and did not reflect the truth of what occurred with the first lottery.
Can I ask, how does it help if only 2% were picked by a random process? The statute says that the selectees have to be picked by a strictly random process, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And how do you define random?
We define random without any deliberative intent.
And where'd you get that definition?
We get that definition from a definition from the dictionary. It's the plain meaning of the word random.
Well, my dictionary says of or designating a sample drawn from a population so that each member of the population has an equal chance to be drawn. That's from Webster's Third College Dictionary. That's the same definition that's in the classic statistics book, Mosteller's book, which is trying to give all outcomes equal chances. And that's the same definition that the State Department announced when it announced the lottery, that all entries received during the registration period will have an equal chance of being selected. So is yours the equivalent to that, that there be an equal chance?
Your Honor, we don't think that the lottery requires an equal chance, but even if we accept that definition, our argument is that the State Department did not have before it evidence that everyone did not have an equal chance when they concluded that the results of the first visa lottery should have been voided.
So do you dispute the government's position is that 98% of all the selectees were people who had signed up the first, I think, 2 days, is it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you disagree with that?
I disagree that, I know that there is a perception that 98% of the visa applicants.
Do you have any evidence that 98% weren't selected from the people who applied the first 2 days?
No, Your Honor, I do not.
All right, so if 98% of the winners came from the first 2 days, is it possible that everybody over the entire 30 days, 31 days of the month had an equal chance? What's the probability that a random distribution of selection where every person has an equal chance would yield 98% of the people who applied the first 2 days?
Your Honor, I submit that we don't have information in order to provide that probability because the State Department has not provided it. For instance, we don't know it is possible that 98% of the people applied on the first 2 days.
I guess it's possible, but the burden of proof is on the petitioner in an APA and even a higher burden in a mandamus case. Government doesn't have the burden, you have the burden. So if you think that that's an possible, I agree it's possible that everybody applied on the first 2 days, but doesn't seem particularly likely, but if you had evidence of that, you have to submit it.
Your Honor, that evidence is not available to us, but the evidence provided by the State Department, the State Department does have to provide a basis. They have to demonstrate that their actions are reasonably related.
They have an affidavit that said 98% of the people were chosen the first 2 days. That wasn't random, and it explained how it came to be that they were chosen from the people who were chosen the first 2 days.
And in the district court proceedings and through the briefs in this case, the plaintiffs have demonstrated that those declarations should really not be entitled to much weight because they are clearly not what happened. We provided explanations, particularly the arguments with respect to how family members who applied in, you know, nearer in time to each other.
Dr. Amin had an answer for that, right? For the 2000 had an answer for why people were would have been chosen on the same day. Right?
Well, Mr. Amin provides an answer with respect to the backfilling explanation, which is right. What I think Your Honor is referring to. And he says that there were people chosen from October 7th through November 3rd. And that accounts for the 2,000 entries that were not picked in sequential order. But he doesn't account for how on October 5th and 6th, people were picked not in sequential order. Nor can that answer...
I don't think that's right. I thought he said that they were picked at a later time. It could have been later on October 6th. All we know is from his testimony that we have a rational explanation for why... For this, what you claim to be an anomaly took place. It was a backfilling process.
I believe that his declaration actually says from at later dates after October 5th and 6th, but even if it doesn't, that still means that he's relying on these 2,000 allegedly backfilled entries to account for every single aberration that the plaintiffs demonstrated. And while the plaintiffs did not have the entire pool to pull from, they did provide numerous examples of where people were not picked in order. They also provided estimates of how many people you could have expected to apply on October 5th from certain countries, and shown, particularly if you look at the Nepal example, that if the backfill explanation is to be believed, you would have to believe that 720 of the 2,000 backfilled entries came from one country
alone. This is his explanation of how applications wound up in particular sectors of the computer storage in a different place. Even if you're 100% right about that, that doesn't get to the question of how something could be described as random if 98% of the selectees come from 2 days out of 30. Even if you're completely right about what he says about the use of sector space in the computer, it doesn't hit the basic problem, which is it's impossible to define a random selection as being one that selects almost everybody from the first 2 days.
Your Honor, we would argue that it's possible because there was no deliberative process to select the people from the first 2 days. They could have just as easily been selected from any other days.
Well, but assume we accept the dictionary, the statistics, and the State Department's own definition of randomness as being an equal probability. If we were to accept that, then you would agree this wouldn't be random, right?
Your Honor, I would not agree that there was sufficient evidence for the State Department to make that conclusion and to take the drastic
You don't
action.
Agree that it means equal opportunity. You said that before. Why not?
No, I don't.
Why not? That's
well,
curious
this,
to me.
As the pool itself does not provide every one of the 19 million people who apply an equal opportunity, because there are other considerations that come into play concerning the regions that people are from. So the idea that every...
Right, but that's right, but the regulation says randomness within the region.
Within the region, yeah.
So you're obviously right that once you apply regions, it's not going to be random inter-region, but that's what the regulation takes account of in order to provide diversity across regions. So let's narrow the question then with respect to randomness within a region. Do you disagree? Do you think let's put it another way, is it unreasonable for the State Department to take the definition contained in the dictionary, in the statistics books, and in their own announcement? Because that's what you have to say, right? In order to be arbitrary and capricious, they have to have chosen an arbitrary, unreasonable definition of the word randomness.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that that's what I have to argue in order to demonstrate that the actions were arbitrary and capricious. Even if that was the definition, the fact remains that the State Department did not do an adequate investigation, which we've shown through showing how the declarations are flawed. That was the only information available to them at the time that they chose to void this to void the results of the first lottery. They did it in a span of about, I believe, 7 days, and this is the conclusion they came to. Further, I would argue that the State Department has not promulgated that definition of randomness as, you know, how they are interpreting this regulation until this litigation. In fact, the district court found that they had not provided a definition of random and actually asked them to supplement the declaration after the hearing and a couple of days before she ruled so that she could know what the State Department was arguing the definition of random was.
What about the public notice 7184 issued on October 1st, 2010, the announcement of the lottery, which says all entries received during the registration period will have an equal chance of being selected within each region? That was not with contemplation of the litigation, was it?
No, Your Honor, but I would posit that that's not, does not demonstrate a reasoned interpretation of random as being a statistical or computer analysis that Mr. Amin provided during the district court litigation.
Well, leave Mr. Amin out. This is a statement by the State Department before the lottery began about what the probabilities would be for each person within a region. So leave Mr. Amin out of it. Here's a definition that they're offering in advance, not in contemplation of litigation. Why isn't that good enough?
Well, even if that is the definition, even if we accept that everybody in a region has to have an equal opportunity, we still don't know that everyone did not have an equal opportunity. All we know is that we have the appearance that 98% were pulled from the first 2 days, and but the conclusion that that necessarily means there wasn't an equal opportunity, I argue, is arbitrary and capricious and was not substantiated by the record.
How do you respond to the argument, quite apart from the definition of randomness, step two of the regulations never took place here, right? It went from step one to step three.
Your Honor, I'm not prepared to concede that step two never took place. I think that enough doubt has been cast on the evidence that the State Department provided to indicate that step two didn't take place that we simply can't know. And we know that some sort of reordering took place. That's what we know, is that 100,000 people were selected and that some reordering took place because it did not happen exactly in the order of...
That's the 2,000. You're saying the 2,000 are evidence that the reordering, that some
the
reordering...
The 2,000 and even the people within the 98,000, because they were not picked in strictly the order that they submitted their applications. Mm-hmm. So I think we have enough reason to know that Mr. Amin's explanation, the State Department's explanation, doesn't stand up. Therefore, we don't know what kind of reordering took place.
You want to talk about equitable estoppel?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you don't have to, but I know you listed it as the second one, and if we don't do it now, you won't get a chance.
So the selectees asked this court to stop the defendants from refusing to process selectees' visa applications. In its opinion, the district court found that plaintiff could not make out a claim for estoppel because they had not demonstrated some sort of affirmative misconduct on the part of the State Department officials. With the introduction of the OIG report, plaintiffs have demonstrated just such affirmative misconduct.
Is your theory that negligence is affirmative misconduct? Or?
Your Honor, I believe that negligence can be affirmative misconduct if it constitutes a commission or omission that at least will cause an egregiously unfair result, as the GAO case stands for. But more than that, I think that this is not a case of simple negligence. Here we have, as the government brought up, a previous OIG report that was very general, talking about the problems that the State Department was having with respect to implementing computer programs, communication with other departments, and these are the very same sort of problems that then the OIG later concluded plagued the first diversity visa program lottery.
What's your best case in which a court has ever found equitable estoppel against the government?
I think that I would have to rely on the GAO case. Well, for this.
There we found no equitable estoppel.
But I think that I have to rely on the fact that the GAO case stands for the proposition that equitable estoppel against the government can be found when there was egregiously unfair.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out what is an egregiously unfair result. We've never found an egregiously unfair result. Has any circuit ever found an egregiously unfair result?
Your Honor, I'm unable to provide a case at this point, but I would posit that, you know, a group of people who participated in the lottery and did what they wanted to do and then took reasonable steps to apply In the way that the State Department asks them to, the State Department stresses that as soon as you find out, you're supposed to go through to start the application process. People sold land so that they could demonstrate that they were not public charges.
The announcement came 5 days later, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We provided declarations in the district court that people took these steps immediately.
People getting married within 5 days? Within 5 days? Selling their land within 5 days?
Yes, Your Honor.
But they knew that they only had, even at that point, even if the thing would work, they would only have a 50% chance of winning anyway, right? Because there are 100,000 selectees and only 50,000 visas.
I understand that, Your Honor, and this is where I think the district court misunderstood our estoppel argument. We're not arguing that they, you know, took reliance on the fact that they were going to immigrate to the United States. The steps that they took, including the selling of the land, as extreme as that might seem, are things that are done in order to demonstrate that you actually can go through the application process. During the application process, you're required to prove that you're not a public, you will not be a public charge. And so the selling of the land was done in order to demonstrate that they had liquid assets. That wasn't part of, like, it was not reliance on coming to the United States. It's reliance on being able to participate in the application.
Sort of a procedural. There was a second lottery, right?
Yes.
And 100,000 people were notified they won the second lottery.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what's their collateral estoppel rights? If we were to give your clients who won the first lottery the visas, what about the collateral estoppel rights of the people who won the second lottery, who the State Department says are deserving of their chance and who the district court said are the only ones deserving of their chance? How do we weigh the unfairness of the people who were notified for 5 days that they had won the lottery and then at the end of 5 days were told they weren't, against the unfairness to the people who won the second lottery and have never been told that they aren't the actual winners?
Well, Your Honor, I think that would go to how the relief in this case would be structured. There is nothing preventing the State Department from including an additional 22,000 people in the evaluation for the visas.
There's only a total of 50,000. It's a cap, right? So if the 22,000 of your clients win, 22,000 of the people in the second lottery lose. This is a zero-sum game, isn't it?
To the extent that there are a certain number of visas and only those number of visas can be awarded, yes. Though, as we demonstrated in the briefs in this case, the State Department has rarely actually awarded all 50,000. So there are a good number of people do end up not qualifying. So we can't really know what will happen to the 100,000 versus the 22,000.
All right, well, I take that point, but put that to the side just for the moment. Assume that out of the 100,000 in the second lottery, 50,000 will actually qualify. Equitable estoppel certainly uses the word equitable, and therefore we have to figure out what's fair. Why is it fair to give your clients the visas rather than the winners of the second lottery?
Simply because our clients won the first lottery and they took these steps, and we don't have a record on which the State Department should not have jumped to void the results of the first lottery.
That's a different question. That equitable estoppel assumes the government's done something wrong but made a representation that somebody has a right to rely on, right? That's the whole point. You only get to your equitable estoppel argument if you lose your first point, right? If we agree with the government that they were not arbitrary and capricious, then you go to your second point, which is even if they weren't arbitrary and capricious, you should still win because they made a misrepresentation to your clients upon which they relied, right?
Yes, sir.
But why is that any different than the representation that was made to the second category? I'll take your point for the moment that was wrong, that they shouldn't have done a second lottery. Nonetheless, the 100,000 people around the world who got they're winning notifications. They don't know anything about the litigation that's going on here. They have no reason to believe that your clients are in the right, that the first lottery was the right one and the second one is the wrong one. So why, and they've done the same kind of things, why in terms of reliance? In fact, they've had a hugely longer period in which to rely. Your folks only had 5 days that they've had. I don't know how long it's been, but it's been almost a fiscal year. Why, from a strictly from a fairness point of view, why should the quote winners of the first lottery be preferred over the quote winners of the second lottery?
Your Honor, while I would be sympathetic to, you know, the winners of the second lottery, the fact remains that they do have a reason to believe that there was a first lottery that may be contested. Not the winners of the second lottery were the same group of people who were involved in the first lottery, so they are aware that the first lottery happened and then a second lottery was done, and they may be aware of this, that this litigation exists. And it's hard for me to speculate because I don't know what steps the winners of the second lottery have taken in reliance, but I do know what my clients have done in reliance on their
make opinion. That determination, then, wouldn't we have to send it back for an individual-by-individual evaluation of each of the 100,000 winners to determine whether they actually reasonably relied? Same way with your clients. Wouldn't we have to go back and see which actual people reasonably relied?
I don't believe that the estoppel argument needs to be a weighing of the fairness for this group versus the other group.
It would be for individuals, wouldn't it?
For the individuals, yes, but if we've demonstrated, I'm a little confused as to Your Honor's question. I mean, if we've demonstrated that as a result of the affirmative misconduct of the government and the promises made by the government, our clients took reasonably relied on that to their detriment, I think that the inquiry ends there.
My question is, I take that I wasn't clear. I guess my question is, reasonable reliance is individual by individual. Not all of your clients reasonably relied. You're not making that claim, are you? Not every single one of them got married, sold their land, canceled other visas. Some people didn't do anything for 5 days.
That's possible.
And those people are not entitled to collateral estoppel, are they?
No, Your Honor, they would not be.
All right, so we would have to go back, if you win this case, we'd have to send it back to the district court to get all 100,000 of your clients in, all 100,000 of the winners of the second in, and on a case-by-case basis, ask them, what steps did you take in reliance on your supposed victory in order to determine whether they're entitled to collateral estoppel? Isn't that right?
Well, Your Honor, at this time, I mean, we have never represented all 100,000 people from the first lottery. We represent 36 individuals, and there was a putative class of 22,000.
So as to the class, if we ever got to the class, we'd have to bring them all in.
I'm not sure that we would have to bring them all in, or if, you know, if you're finding that the results of the first lottery should be upheld because, or should be enforced because of the estoppel, that might apply to everybody in the class.
How would it apply to people who didn't actually reasonably rely? I mean, I take the, you're saying all 36 of your clients did reasonably rely, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All 36?
I cannot answer that question right now.
So at least as to, that's the honest answer, and I think that's right. We don't know. So we'd have to at least have hearings to determine whether those 36 actually did anything, right?
Hearings, or we could rely on the declarations that we did provide in the district court.
Did you have one for each of the 36 people?
I do not know that I have one for each of the 36, but I believe that I have for the majority of the.
Okay. So, but then wouldn't we have to give the others a chance to make their own declarations to see who reasonably relied more? That is, the winners of the second lottery.
I'm not sure that the inquiry is reasonably relied more, though.
How would we decide fair? This is like a classic case of, yes, there was unfairness done to your clients, but there was also a possible unfairness done to a whole nother set of people, the winners of the second lottery, and both can't win. So I guess we could use a random number generator and make a determination. We could flip a coin. But you don't want us to do that.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that the State Department knows how to do two visa lotteries in the same year and to, you know, order them in the way that makes the most sense. They intend to do that for their website demonstration. They intend to do that for the fiscal year 2013 diversity visa lottery. They did a drawing in the past few weeks, and they've told everyone to hold on to their numbers because they will probably be doing another one in October. I think that there's a way to work this out that will not prejudice the 22,000 with respect to 100,000, but will allow everyone to participate in the process.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Your Honor, I know that we...
I will give you more time. I ate up your time. Sorry. I apologize. We'll give you more. We'll hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Hans Chen representing the defendants' appellees.
Well, Mr. Chen, let me ask you first, is the government still arguing that this case is moot?
Yes, we are, Your Honor, and let me explain why, and my answer will tie in very closely to Judge Garland's examination of prior counsel. What we have here is a system that's run by regulation. One of those regulations, 42.33E, dictates that the State Department can only process applications of diversity visa selectees based on something called a regional rank lottery number. This government is arguing that the day after the district court issued its decision, the State Department reassigned those regional rank lottery numbers. And by doing so, the relief that the plaintiffs claim this court can still award evaporated. What the plaintiffs are asking for is a court-ordered plan to devise a way for the plaintiffs to be treated equally with the selectees of the second visa lottery. However, the only way to treat any application, Your Honor mentioned a zero-sum game. It's not merely a zero-sum game in terms of visas awarded. It's a zero-sum game in terms of whose applications get processed. The only way for the State Department, by regulation, to even consider applications submitted by visa lottery selectees is through these regional rank lottery numbers.
I don't understand why this is an argument about mootness. This strikes me as an argument about the merits. So when we decide on a question like mootness or any other jurisdictional question, we have to begin by assuming that the other side is correct on the merits. So if we assume that they are correct, that the first lottery was lawful and the second lottery was unlawful, then all the people in the second lottery get nothing. They get no consideration. The only people left are that we need to consider are the people in the first lottery. And the only way this case would be moot is if you have no spaces left. My understanding is you do have spaces left. Is that right?
Our argument about mootness is based on what the plaintiffs claim is their form of effective relief. And it's also based on their concession that nothing prevents the State Department from conducting additional lotteries. For example, what the State
I don't understand that to be their concession. I'm sorry. Well, fortunately, we gave the other side a chance to respond, but I don't believe their argument is that you were allowed to have a second lottery. Their argument was that the first lottery was lawful and was unreasonable for you to do a second lottery.
They've recognized in their pleadings to the district court, and particularly a supplemental pleading after the plaintiffs submitted their second declaration from Mr. Ayman, that there's nothing stopping the State Department from supplementing the 100,000, even in the first the lottery. There's nothing keeping them from selecting another 100,000, which they did through the second lottery.
How far along are you in the second lottery? It's not finished yet, is it? I mean, you could stop it right now and award, and the relief could be awarded if they were.
According to my clients at the State Department, Your Honor, they have processed applications.
Well, how many of the 50,000 visas that the State Department's allowed to give during this period, this fiscal year under this program, have already been granted?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
But you agree that not all of them?
That's right, Your Honor.
All right. So if we were to take the view that mootness means that there's nothing left, this would not be moot. I appreciate you don't take that view. But if we did take the view that mootness means there's no more visas left to give to the other, to the clients of the plaintiffs, then this case is not moot.
If you disregard 42.33E, which sets out the process by which
we wouldn't disregard it, of course. We would rather accept the plaintiff's interpretation, which is that there's supposed to be one lottery, it's supposed to be random, it's supposed to give equal chances, and once you've done that, you have to give those people their equal chance, the chance that they've won. If we took that position, then as long as there are spaces available, it's not moot.
That's correct. That's the plaintiff's position, Your Honor, that as long as there's one plaintiff and one visa to be matched up, their argument is that it's not moot. Let me move on then to the argument on the merits. And what I'd like to address is the plaintiff's claim that the declarations are insufficient, that the district court reached an erroneous finding of fact as to what happened. I'll also argue that there's no mandamus in this case to issue forth from the court. And then I'll address the estoppel arguments.
Okay. In doing that, would you start with the standard of review? Because I think there's an error in the government's view about what the standard of review should be.
Your Honor, our position is that on a mandamus claim, it's a mixed question of fact and law. And that as to the underlying findings of fact, those are reviewed for clear error.
And on the APA claim?
Again, Your Honor, we've cited authority that APA claims are also mixed questions of fact and law, and that the underlying questions of fact are reviewed for clear error.
All right, so just for the government's further reference, this court has decided in a series, maybe a dozen cases now since Holland versus National Mining Association, that when we review an APA decision of a district court, we give no deference at all to the district court. That is, the district court is doing exactly the same thing we're doing. They're reviewing the agency determination for whether it's arbitrary, capricious, and supported by substantial evidence. And while, of course, we pay attention to what the district court said, its view of the facts aren't really relevant. This is just an APA review.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor.
And that's not necessarily bad for the government, which is, I'm surprised you're fighting it so much, because now the test is only substantial evidence,
that's
not
right,
clear error.
And let me move on to that point. Let's not. I take your point about the authority, but let's move on to whether or not substantial evidence supports that. What Mr. Amin's declaration said was that the 2% of winners won because they were backfilled. But he never limited the backfilling to those 2%. What he said was that there was backfilling of petitions submitted later in time. And so what the plaintiffs have tried to do is pull two cases of petitions submitted later in time. They say, how can those two submissions have won? The plaintiff's position, supported by Mr. Ammon, is that those were petitions submitted later in time, later on the 6th, subsequent to the 5th. They were backfilled by one day, not by 2 days, not by 20 days, by one day. Mr. Amin's declaration accounts for that possibility, and in fact, the State Department's position is that that's what happened.
And the State Department's position is that 98% of the winners came from the first 2 days.
That's right, Your Honor, and there's no evidence to dispute that.
And the whole process went on for 30 days?
No, Your Honor, the submission process took place over 30 days in which citizens from around the world could submit applications.
How long did they?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How long were applications submitted?
I don't know the answer to that, sir, but Your Honor, but the fact is that the
might that not be significant? Your opponent thinks it might be, that in fact, what if the whole universe of submissions took place over 2 days, the 5th and the 6th?
We know that's not true, Your Honor, because there were submissions that were submitted later in the month after October 7th that won. And so it's evident that there were submissions submitted later.
They were backfilled, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's right. So, Your Honor, we realize that the plaintiffs are arguing that there's their definition of lottery should prevail. However, administrative law precepts, Your Honor, require this court to give deference to the State Department's interpretation both of its procedural regulations and also the substantive regulations of what this lottery requires in terms of randomness. The plaintiffs have never disputed until this morning that the step two that Your Honor referred to never took place. They've never disputed that until today. And furthermore, even as of this morning, they have no evidence to dispute that step two never took place. The State Department's review of the regulation 42.33C is that all three steps need to take place. Their view is that the second step did not take place. Their view is that if the regulation is not followed procedurally, the drawing has no effect.
Just help me with the numbering of the steps.
Yes.
I only really see two of interest. What are the three steps?
First step, Your Honor, is
submitting an application.
The steps refer to what the State Department's actions are. So the first would be receipt through the database program, sorting into regions and countries, and then an initial numbering.
Okay.
The second step, and I'll read it to you, Your Honor, is from 42.33C. Upon completion of the numbering of all petitions, that's step one, all numbers assigned for each region will be separately rank ordered at random by a computer using standard computer software for that purpose. The third step, Your Honor, is the actual drawing of the selectees.
Okay, got it. The random drawing of the selectees from those?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Well, maybe I'm wrong about that. So the second step is the numbers assigned will be rank ordered The third is not random. The third is then to select them from that
is the skimming off process, Your Honor.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And, Your Honor, that process is the process by which we, the State Department, fulfills its statutory mandate. The statutory mandate calls for selection of diversity visa applicants in a strictly random order. And, Your Honor, questioned previous counsel as to what strictly random means. It's the State Department's view that strictly random means random without any other consideration. Random, 100% random, not 99% random, not 2% random.
Which still doesn't define what random means.
Right. Well, Mr. Imin's satisfied
random
that
means, under that definition, random means not random.
Mr.
Not,
Imin,
not random.
But isn't your theory that you can win this case simply by what we just identified, if there's no step two?
Yes, Your Honor. It's our first argument as to the mandamus claim, and as well as the APA claim, that the procedural irregularities in this diversity visa lottery, the first visa drawing, dooms.
If we agreed with you on that, we wouldn't need to get into discussions of randomness? Or
you would, Your Honor, but I still have 4 minutes. So, yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes, that is our position,
you
Your Honor.
You don't have to take all of your time.
I will, though, Your Honor. It's sufficient for this court to find that the procedural irregularities and the failure to conduct the random reordering is sufficient for the defendant's position to prevail.
Isn't the government's position on the definition of randomness the one they announced, which is equal probabilities for each applicant?
Yes, Your Honor, and we announced it beforehand, and we announced it after the result was found to be irregular. So this is not a post hoc excuse or any excuse taken post litigation. It is a definition that matches as well the computer science definition of the term. And so those definitions were clearly not met in this situation when 98% of the selectees came from the first 2 days. As to the substantive requirement for this regulation and statute, Your Honor, as I mentioned, this statute calls for a drawing in a strictly random order. It's the State Department's view that strictly random can only be accomplished if the second step is met. In other words, strictly random requires 100% randomness, 100% indication of an equal probability, and that again was not met, Your Honor.
The district court here had the benefit of Mr. Amin's declaration about what happened, but the State Department, it seems, revoked this after 7 days or something like that, decided they had a problem. Do we know what information they had at that point?
I can tell you, Your Honor, that they had the information, they had the self-evident results, which is that...
Should I say that?
They had the self-evident results, which is 98% of the lottery winners. We also know, Your Honor, from the exhibits that the plaintiffs moved into evidence, which is an announcement from the State Department at the time of the cancellation. By then, they had already realized that a computer programming error had taken place.
Where is that? Where is that?
It's Exhibit 2, I believe, to the complaint, Your Honor.
Is it in the...
It's in the record at 49. What the State Department said was that although we received large numbers of entries every day during the 30-day registration period, a computer programming error caused more than 90% of the selectees to come from the first 2 days of the registration period. So by then they had
there
already...
You have the, there at least is the government's statement of the evidence that they received large numbers every day during the 30-day period.
Right, but they also identified the computer programming error.
No, I got that, but before you told me you didn't know whether there were... entries on days other than the first two, but you assume there were. Here we actually have somebody from the State Department saying what they thought was the case.
Yes, Your Honor.
At the time.
Reviewing this exhibit refreshes my recollection that, in fact, the State Department knew that there were selectees who had submitted throughout the month, 30-day period to do so. As to, Your Honor, the question of estoppel, first of all, Your Honors, the reliance that the plaintiffs have pointed to is, we argue, not reasonable at all. It is a reliance based on their understanding that they would be given visas. Why else would they be selling land? Why else would they be telling children they're emigrating to the United States? Those are acts of reliance that are unreasonable because they...
Well, to be fair, which of course is what equitable estoppel is all about, their argument is They were told they had it. And then, well, let me back up for one moment. Once you tell 100,000 people that they have it, obviously 100,000 people aren't going to get it, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
And in figuring out which of the 100,000 get it, my understanding was it was the first filers who qualified. Is that right?
No, that's not right, Your Honor.
How did you determine within the 100,000? Was it another random test?
No, it's the numbers that each selectee is assigned. It's the regional rank lottery numbers that I referred to earlier. When you are selected in the diversity visa lottery, not only are you told you've been selected, you're a winner, quote, but you are given a regional rank lottery number. And that number dictates when your visa becomes available.
So there was no rush? Then maybe I misunderstood. I understood that the reason that they moved so quickly, people decided to move quickly, was they thought that they had to get their application in as soon as possible. Is that wrong?
To be fair, Your Honor, they are encouraged to submit their applications
as soon as possible.
So, but that doesn't mean necessarily that the first person, the first of the 100,000 who gets his papers
no,
in does
no,
not get
but
his
if
visa
you
first.
Tell people, get your stuff in as soon as possible, you're telling them to sell their land and to do all the other things they need in order to get their application in as soon as possible so that they can say, I have this amount of money, I'm not going to be a public charge, or whatever the reasons are. So that is a representation to them about moving as fast as possible.
I'm not certain, Your Honor, that that liquidity is an element of that's required for them to submit their applications.
No, but they need to show that they're not going to be a public charge, right? And so,
which they can do by pointing to the 100 acres of land which they sold the day before, if it had not been sold.
Well, what about, I mean, whatever, there, I guess there's some of these people who just spent money on getting their application done, getting their application in, getting couriers, etc.
Your Honor, we don't believe that you're entitled to a visa based on amount of $25 for courier fees.
Well, what if your entire income for 10 years was $25? In some parts of the world, $25 is an awful lot of money.
Your Honor, I agree with you on that economic point. Mm-hmm. But the larger point as to equitable estoppel, their claim is that the government's actions showed an egregiously unfair result. And I'd like to address Your Honor's question about what the unfair result is to the winners of the second lottery. The only egregiously unfair result in this case, Your Honor, with both groups of selectees, would be for the State Department or any other court to say you're more likely to win if you apply the first 2 days. The equitable estoppel, the reliance that the government would like to point out to the court, is the reliance on the Federal Register announcement that it doesn't matter what day you apply. You can apply on the last day. If you can't get to a computer on the first day, it doesn't matter. And so it's reasonable to believe that people relied on that previously published statement in the Federal Register.
So that's with respect to equitable estoppel among the people in the first lottery. And then what about the people in the second lottery? Are they not also entitled to
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree with you that the statements of the State Department as to the winners of the second lottery need also be taken into consideration, particularly because they bore the endorsement of a U.S. District Court judge.
That's only if they took their actions after Judge Jackson made her decision rather than before, I guess.
They did, Your Honor. They did do so because they announced the winners of the, they announced the selectees of the second diversity visa lottery only after receiving
them. Oh, I see. So it was stayed before? I forgot about that. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. It worked out quite coincidentally where the the State Department, in its announcement at page 49 of the record, informed the public that they would be releasing the results of the second diversity visa lottery on the 15th of July. And the district court, through very efficient use of judicial resources, reached a decision the day before, freeing the State Department to act. So, Your Honor, the reliance isn't just to the winners of the second selection. It goes to everyone who applied in the first selection. Everyone but for the 22,000 members of the putative class. We can reasonably assume that there were members who had applied for the diversity visa lottery who hoped to win the first time around, but who applied later in the month because they relied reasonably. Certainly, they followed nothing less than the State Department's statement months before in the Federal Register, that it didn't matter what time they applied, what day they applied, and that was not borne out. What the State Department therefore did was take weigh considerations. They realized that they have a statutory duty to issue 50,000 diversity visas. That can't be abrogated. They had, on the other hand, a diversity visa lottery that really is undisputed, did not occur according to procedure, and did not meet the substantive requirements of the statute that it be held in a strictly random order. And so their only alternative, Your Honor, was to fulfill the original mandate of the statute, which is to say, distribute the diversity visa slots in a strictly random order. And the only way to do that, Your Honor, was to strike the results of the first selection and conduct a second one. In that respect, the second selection is nothing less than what they should have done in the first place. And in fact, by doing so, they fulfilled their mandate.
Further questions? Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I already know the answer to the question, does she have any more time? The answer is no, but we'll give you a few more minutes to answer.
Your Honor, the first point I would like to go to is our argument that there wasn't sufficient evidence in the declarations. Now, during the government's argument, you looked at the notice which said a large number of people applied every day. The fact of the matter is that doesn't provide us the information we need to conclude that it wasn't 98% in the first 2 days. When you're talking about 19 million people applying for something, you can have a large number of people applying on any day and it still not be, you know, the overwhelming majority or it being an equal distribution. The State Department still has not been able to provide any explanation of what kind of curve we're looking at for the application process. And this is just one element of the information that shows that all they did was a knee-jerk reaction. They saw 98% come from October 5th and 6th, and they assumed, and, you know, granted, I understand why, you know, a layperson like myself might assume that means something, but when you actually look into it, it doesn't necessarily lead to it wasn't a random result.
Well, in the end, they looked at the software and found out that it wasn't programmed correctly. Are they lying about that, do you think?
I cannot say whether or not they are lying. What I can say is that the conclusion that it was a computer programming error has been demonstrated to be untrue, or at the very least, an incomplete explanation of what occurred.
What would be the motivation to say to lie? They'd be lying. This is a statement under oath. What's the motivation for lying about finding a computer software error? Seems like an awfully big thing to risk in order to overturn a lottery in which you have no interest.
Your Honor, I hesitate to speculate about, you know, other people's motivations. What I know is that the results of the lottery came out. There was a public outcry because people who had not won were upset and perceived themselves to have been disadvantaged by the system, and the State Department rushed to provide an answer. Those are the facts that I know. I don't think I have to demonstrate that it was a lie so much as it was not a carefully considered and reasoned decision to void the results of the first lottery. The other issue that I wanted to turn to was that Mr. Amin's declaration, the government's assertion that Mr. Amin's declaration did not say that the backfilling was limited to 2,000, but I think that's an unreasonable reading of Mr. Amin's declarations. The government has repeatedly said that the backfilling accounts for this other 2%, but has not said that there was so much shifting going on October 5th and 6th. And if there were that much shifting, then it clearly was not, people were not pulled out in the order that they were put in. Even if they were pulled out from October 5th and 6th, the government's argument has repeatedly been that people were pulled out of the system primarily in the order in which they applied, and that was the district court's conclusion as well, based on the Amin declarations. And finally, with respect to the estoppel argument, the government makes light of the types of reliance or the types of actions that our clients took in reliance. But they weren't just, even if you were to assume that $25 was not a large amount of money. It wasn't simply paying courier fees. There were medical examinations that were taken. There were vaccinations they got. They sold land. They took these steps all because they had to in order to have a chance at winning the visas.
And your understanding was that there was some benefit to applying as soon as possible.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think the State Department's website makes that very clear. They encourage people to get their applications in as quickly as possible. And the fact that they have numbers assigned doesn't change that that's the State Department's instruction to people.
Further questions? All right, thank you very much. It's a very interesting case. We'll take this under submission.
Contact in the fence.